official Eurovision Song Contest podcast.
Shalom, hello and welcome to Tel Aviv on the day of the Eurovision Song Contest 2019 Grand Final.
We are here to take you behind the scenes at the world's biggest live music show.
On today's episode, the executive producer of this year's show tells us what's new about the way your votes will be revealed this year.
And you'll hear from the person responsible for ensuring your votes are counted and verified on the night.
You'll find out how one delegation developed their staging concept between their national final and the song contest stage.
You'll discover more about how the running order for the grand final is put together to create the most exciting show possible.
And of course, you'll hear more from the competing artists on what the Eurovision Song Contest means to them. I'm Dave Goodman.
And I'm Joe Mason. This is the official Eurovision Song Contest podcast,
brought to you by the EBU. So that's it. The semi-finals are all over. 10 more EBU members were successful in qualifying from the second semi-final on Thursday night. And that now means we have a complete lineup of 26 grand finalists.
And shortly before the semi-final, we were finally able to announce that Madonna has been confirmed to perform on the Expo Tel Aviv stage. But following the show, attention turned to the all-important running order for the grand final. This has now been decided, and we'll hear more about how it's produced later in the episode. But it means we have an incredibly exciting show lined up for tonight. What are you most looking forward to, Dave?
It's a difficult question when you've got nearly 4 hours of fantastic entertainment to look forward to in the grand final. So many strong songs this year, so many imaginative and different performances to enjoy as well. Can, our Israeli member, have also been really creative with all the show elements around the competing songs as well. It's going to be great to see all the past Eurovision performers coming on to perform and switch their songs, like Mon Selmelov and Conchita Wurst will be there. And for me personally, the return of some of Israel winners as well, performing on that stage, and previous singers from Israel. That's something really special.
Yeah, I cannot wait to see Eleni Ferreira, Cyprus's runner-up from last year, return to the Eurovision stage. She came so close to victory last year with the song Fuego. The staging was absolutely unreal, so I can imagine that whatever happens when she performs on Saturday night, amongst all of the other Eurovision legends, we're in for a world-class treat. It's going to be like a festival in the arena.
Can have done an amazing job of bringing all the past Eurovision magic together. They've really, really embraced the whole history of the Eurovision Song Contest this year, which is fantastic to see. And apart from all the exciting acts we're going to see in the grand final, there is, of course, the denouement of the evening, the voting. It's so unpredictable. It's going to be so exciting. But I think the one thing we can predict about the voting is that we're going to see an incredibly exciting sequence. And the person responsible for overseeing that all your votes and the votes from all the juries are received, verified, and added together has a hugely important job, of course. His name is Thomas Niedermeyer from Digame.
Basically, starting 3 weeks before the grand final, we are already here, preparing everything, setting everything up, and talking with everybody involved for the result.
So from the moment that I am watching the show at home, I've chosen which country I want to vote for, and the voting is open. I know what number I need to dial. Where do you then come in? What happens at that point?
We are connected to all the carriers and mobile operators all across Europe and Australia, and we get your vote on our platform the moment you send it away. But the entire magic basically happens when after the voting is closed. We analyze the results, check that everything is in order, transform it into the 12 points, and combine it with the jury results.
How long after the voting is closed do you know who the winner of the Eurovision Song Contest is?
This actually takes a while because the security measures for the Eurovision Song Contest are like for no other contest shows in the world, so high. So we actually take about 35, 40 minutes to really make sure that everything is in order before we release the results. And this is when I know. The overall result is all known in our headquarters in Cologne by four supervisors and the auditor and us here, Jon Olason and me, on the scrutineer's desk.
Then when you've got that information, how many more people know before the audiences at home know who the winner of the Eurovision Song Contest is?
The traffic guys and the Obi-Wan get this information, but they get like pieces. They look at it step by step. What is the next country where they are announcing? Probably Jon Ola then informs them roundabout when we start to announce the audience results who is going to be the winner, which is of course kept at a very close circle that, because we don't want any leaks. We want to have this emotion in the green room real as possible. And so to create that secrecy is quite important for us.
What audiences at home are interested by is how the graphics seamlessly come in at the time of the voting. How much time do they have to prepare this information from the moment that you give the actual voting numbers to seeing the results being delivered on screen?
This is not very difficult. They are professionals. This is like traffic, putting traffic engines on sports games. They get from us files, text files, plain, very easy to read, and they just make it look nice. So the moment we send them the files, which can be just seconds, this is then also for them quite intensive. For the big grand final, we have a little bit more time, but not more than a couple of minutes. So we achieve this by really practicing, by talking with them, by preparing as best as possible. And then you can pretty much do everything with a lot of practice.
You've worked on quite a few Eurovision Song Contests now. What's been the most tense moment for you as the voting supervisor for the Eurovision Song Contest?
We did have our tense moment back in Copenhagen during one of the semi-final, which the host changed it by saying, interviewing Jon Ola and saying, "You never were late on a result. Why?" And it was exactly in this moment that we were running late, because we had all the results, but there was a network problem between us and the traffic operator, so they couldn't get the results from us. So we had to delay for 2 minutes. And this was when a really tense moment, when you have this problem of having the results, but getting it to the traffic engine. Since this time, no host is allowed to say that we are always on time.
So if they're suddenly just filling for time, then we could be looking at the man to blame.
It's generally my fault if we are running late.
Hello, my name is Kate Miller-Heidke. If I had to choose three words to describe Eurovision, I'd choose spectacle, celebration and joy.
The official Eurovision Song Contest podcast.
Now, the voting at the Eurovision Song Contest has changed a lot over the years. The 12 points system that we know and love was only introduced in 1975, and for a few years after that, the voting wasn't actually delivered in numerical order, 1, 2, 3, 4, and up to 8, 10, and 12, but actually in performance order, which led to more than a little confusion on the night.
And there have been various changes over the history. There have been periods of time when it was just a jury who voted for the national delegations and who they thought should win the competition. Then the televote was introduced, and that meant that we scrapped the juries and it was just down to the voting public. Now we've got the best of both worlds. We've got the juries and the public on the televote with a 50-50 split. The results used to be presented together, so you'd just hear from each delegation the once. You would hear the spokesperson announcing the 8, 10 and 12 points, so the top three for each country, and you'd see on screen just a graphic with the rest of the points. That all changed in 2016 in Stockholm when we saw a new model of the results delivery.
So we actually saw the votes being split between the juries and the televote, revealed separately to create a much more exciting sequence. And that's going to change again this year.
Any change is quite difficult to understand, but ultimately it's to make a more compelling live grand final.
and exciting voting. As well as that, the EBU and host broadcaster Cannes want the whole of the world's biggest live music show to be an amazing spectacle. And the woman in charge of overseeing the production this year is one of Israel's most experienced television creatives, executive producer Zivit Davidovich.
The role is actually to get together a lot of talented people and create the most amazing Eurovision contest that a person can think about in terms of video and the lighting and the set and everything that you give for delegations on stage and off stage in terms of the bubble and offices and everything else.
What's the one thing that you hope that viewers will take away from the experience of watching the Eurovision Song Contest in Israel?
We try to show that Israel, though we are such a small country, not really in Europe, we're trying to be European, but we're not really in Europe, the technology here is very advanced. Basically, we try to show a different side of Israel than the side that usually is on the news. The creative, the fun, the side of Israel that only deals with Eurovision Song Contest, which is music and art.
There have been some incredible technical innovations on screen. We've seen loads of augmented reality. One of the innovations this year with the grand final is the reveal of the results at the end. So could you just talk me through what has changed with the points reveal?
It was decided that the points were from the audience, from the public, will be revealed from top to bottom of the from the order of the countries. So the last country that in the last place will be the first one to receive the points. And it's not going to go by the points, it's going to go by the order of the countries. The challenge was with the graphic and how to show and understand the screen. It was challenging, and I hope we were successful in trying to do something good about it. We'll see.
You've been working on this project for a long time now. What's the thing you're most proud of having worked on the song contest?
I'm proud of the team. We have an amazing team. We actually gathered incredible people, creative people, creative producers, people that usually don't work together on one production. Basically, they work sometimes in different productions, in different channels. And we all worked together for almost 10 months. In order to have the most incredible show we could think of and to be able to show new ideas, to dream big and to fulfill. And, basically, we really tried to shine, and hopefully we will show us, you know, the tech, that we are very technical, that we can show the advanced progress of video and augmented and the set and everything else that has to do with the show.
What advice would you give to the next executive producer of the Eurovision Song Contest, now knowing what you know about the role?
Well, the first advice is that the ESC is not really television and the village and fun stuff. It's a lot to do with dealing with the city and the government and all those things that usually producers don't do. So just the next executive producer know that ahead of you, lots of meetings that has nothing to do with the song contest. But have fun. It's an amazing road, and it was, I think, one of the most exciting year I've ever had.
This is Sahat. I'm representing San Marino. Eurovision is peace, music, and friendship.
The official Eurovision Song Contest podcast.
So we are going to go from the bottom of the scoreboard up, essentially. Whoever is last in the jury vote, we're going to hear their votes from the televote first and then move up the scoreboard in order.
I think it sounds a lot more confusing than what it will be on the night.
It will all make sense on the night because you just have to look at the bottom of the scoreboard to see which country will have its votes from the public vote revealed next.
Talking about delivering the perfect results, I caught up with this year's spokesperson for the BBC, Ryland Clark-Neal, to see what he has planned for the show.
I am the semi-final commentator for the United Kingdom, and this year I am the United Kingdom spokesperson.
You sound pretty excited about this, Ryland, so tell me a little bit about your history with the song contest.
Well, I thought it was an accident that they asked me, but I commentated last year for the very first time. I've always been a massive fan of Eurovision, and it went really, really well, and I loved it in Lisbon. And then I was head judge this year on the British Selections show, You Decide, And I'm back here in Tel Aviv to commentate again for the semi-finals. And then I'll be flying back on Friday, because on Saturday I'll be saying Ere Tov, Tel Aviv. Good evening, Europe, and good morning, Australia. This is London calling.
This is so exciting. So just give me a little bit of an overview of the preparations that you need to do before you go into the commentary booth for a Eurovision show.
So for the commentary, I mean, we have to have about two or three rehearsals. So we watch the dress run, we watch the jury vote, and then we watch another dress run just to make sure no last minute changes have happened or anything like that, because we need to know about that. We want to make sure that the United Kingdom viewers get the exact right thing that they're seeing on screen, is what we're saying. So it's a lot of hard work. I mean, I've been here for 9 days now, because in our semi-final shows we also have VT content with, for example, we've had Dana International, Conchita, a lot of this year's acts. So yeah, it's been quite tough. I even dressed up as Madonna this week in a leotard and tights, which I've had some compliments on my legs, so I'm really happy.
Anything goes at Eurovision.
Anything goes at Eurovision.
So on Saturday night for the grand final, you are going to be the spokesperson for the United Kingdom. An incredible opportunity. But what do you think it takes to deliver the perfect scoreline?
Do you know what? I've always thought about this, and there's been certain spokespeople over the years that start singing and then they start promoting their album or start doing... No, love, this is not about you. This is about the finalists that are sitting there waiting for your votes that can potentially make them a winner. So just a quick line in, say hello in the language to the country you're speaking to, say good evening, Europe, good morning, Australia, because you can't forget our lovely friends in Australia, and then say where you're calling from, and then literally a 5 to 10 second congratulations on a fantastic show, and now it's time for the results of the United Kingdom.
We are sisters
from Germany,
and Eurovision is colorful,
exciting, crazy.
The official Eurovision Song Contest podcast.
The amount of tech equipment being used here in Tel Aviv is astonishing. It takes a crew of the best international talent 6 weeks to put together the stage and all the infrastructure needed to broadcast live to over 40 countries. How many tons of equipment, Joe, do you think is in the ceiling of the Expo Tel Aviv alone?
Tons?
Tons of equipment.
Oh, I can't imagine what a ton weighs. I think it's very heavy in its own right, so it's got to be something like 80, 90 tons.
It's in fact 185 tons of rigged equipment in the ceiling, and that is actually double the previous highest amount that we've had at the Eurovision Song Contest. And how many kilometres of cable do you think it needs for the broadcast?
Kilometres, so we're not talking about just metres. KMs, I reckon it's got to be something like 5 to 10. Let's go for 9 km.
It's actually 11 kilometres. So that is actually further than going, I think, from the Expo Tel Aviv to the centre of downtown Tel Aviv and back again.
We should just lay it out for fun. That'd
incredible.
Be great.
And the lighting, we have got a lot of cable for lighting. What do you think? How much?
How many kilometres?
Yeah.
Let's go for something like 10,000 metres.
80,024 metres of cable for the lighting alone. And of course, Madonna, who is joining us, has about that many people to help her with her performance. There are over 1,200 people in the 41 delegations out here, and each delegation is led by one person from each EBU member taking part. Now, we've heard this week on the podcast about how the host broadcaster helps the delegations to achieve their creative dreams on stage. But where do the delegations start in the first place?
Stephen Clarimer is looking after France Télévision's team out here in Tel Aviv, and I caught up with him to ask more about how you go about creating a memorable performance and the evolution from national final to the Eurovision stage.
I was nominated head of delegation in October, and it was the beginning of the casting for the French national selection. And my input was to say that all the winners of the last editions of Eurovision, they had something in common, not the style of music, but something about the way the artists embody their songs and the continuity between the story and the artist. So we selected 18 artists that were telling their stories. So that was the common point between all the artists.
Blau was selected by a combination of jury votes and the French public. Obviously, his performance has changed a lot since the performance on stage. How much artistic direction have you brought forward from the selection show to what we will now see on the Eurovision stage?
The context was that we have a great song with a great artist, but on the national selection, he won because of the public. He didn't have a great ranking in the international juries, so I tried to understand why. And I didn't get why the message of the song, that is universal self-acceptance and fight against cyberbullying, was not like getting into the public. So we tried to find a way, and that's why I called Marika Prochet, the artistic director, because she's really into that kind of emotions. I wanted to widen the message so that the message of Bilal becomes the message of everyone, and finding a way to understand what is Bilal Hassani's story through the story of, you know, a lot of characters. And we found those beautiful dancers, that overweight ballerina, Lizzie Howell, and the deaf dancer that never heard music, but she can dance with the vibrations of the room.
So how many people does it take to bring such a creative vision alive?
For the first time, France has a complete production team for that specific performance. So we have an artistic director first, that is called Marika Prochet, that had the idea of calling Lizzie Howell to join the stage. That was the first input she had. And then we have a director for camera shots. We have Paul Lacroix, who's a Franco-Japanese engineer in face mapping, for the introduction of the show. And a choreographer called Julius Pisser. And Bilal had a lot of input, because himself is like a project manager and he has a lot of creative ideas. So
how much of what you managed to do in France with the creative vision were you able to bring over seamlessly here in Israel?
To be very specific, we wanted to give a file to the production here so that there is no doubt. Listening to them, because we have a lot of very experienced professionals here, so we wanted to just have their input, but we were very, very, very strict on what we wanted. And I can see no change between the version we had in mind and what you're going to see on stage here.
It's the second year that you've held a national selection show. What's the importance of having a national selection show for a public service broadcaster? What have you learned, and what do you see the future being?
The Eurovision brand is strong. It's like Eurovision is one of the biggest shows in France in terms of ratings and shares. So we wanted to widen the brand and find a new talent show that is independent from Eurovision. So you can watch Destination Eurovision without thinking about Eurovision. That was the idea. So we have a lot of ideas for next season. In France, we're very, very, very strict. Public wants to know how the artist is chosen. So we need transparency. We need to explain people exactly what's going on and how the artists are selected. If you're service public, you have to give people the keys, and that's the key.
Hello, I'm Sergey Lazarev from Russia. In three words, fun, talent, and connection.
The official Eurovision Song Contest podcast.
Okay, so it's one of the most talked about things every year among Eurovision Song Contest pundits. How do you put together the perfect running order for the grand final?
Where do you even start? We know that the delegations have to draw whether they appear in the first or the second half of the show. But what goes into the decision-making process otherwise?
Well, it all takes place in a secret location. But you, Joe, were rather lucky to be able to join those who are involved in making that decision immediately after the second semi-final finishes. The person in charge of making sure you see the most exciting and diverse competition on Saturday night is contest producer Krista Bjorkman.
For me, it's important to have a variety on both sides. You know, you want to have tempos of different kinds, different genres, different genders, different difficulties in the acts, the props that we have to bring on and off stage. So we, actually in the room, we also have the people who are responsible for getting things on and off, because it's very complicated to do it in the 40-second time frame that we have. We also look at how did it look in the semi, where were they in the semi-final. I mean, you don't want to start with the same country a second time, for example. So you just have to remember all those things that you want to avoid. But in the end, it's all about making a good TV show. We know it's a long show. It's one of the longest TV shows there are. And you don't want people to get bored, you know? So you have to make it joyful and exciting and surprising. One of the challenges this year in the first half was that half of the songs of the 13 are ballads. And you have to definitely spread those out so you have different energies from one number to another. On the second half, there were very few female artists, which can be a bit boring if you don't do it right. But I think we overcame all those challenges, and I think we have a fantastic running order and a great show. I think that the viewers will feel surprised, and they will feel entertained all the time, and they will be thrown in around in emotions of different kinds. So, no, all good.
How does the running order that you've got in front of you reflect what your ideal running order would have been if the delegations weren't designated in the first or second half of the show?
Oh, it would have been easier, absolutely. And I mean, I could have done an even better job if I could have chosen totally freely. Then I would have had a little bit more female artists on the second half. I would have had not as many ballads on the first half. But it's marginal, you know? It's like, yeah, and you shouldn't really consider if, because it's not the way it is. And I mean, I have to say, it's just after 2 o'clock. We did it quite fast, so it was not that complicated. It was intriguing, it was interesting, and it was a lot of fun, and I'm very, very pleased with it. And when I look at it, it's like, oh, wow, I want to see this show.
Do you think the running order does have an impact on who will eventually win the Eurovision Song Contest?
Yes and no. I don't think where, number-wise, where you end up is important. However, what I put around you or a song is important, because to stick out and to shine for 3 minutes, you need to be surrounded with something that is totally different than you are yourself. So in that sense, yes. And I can give you an example from back in the years. In 2011, we ended up with 4 or 5 up-tempo songs in a row on the first half. And neck to neck were Jedward and Erik Saade from Sweden. And they were the two young artists with a very modern pop song. And they were neck to neck. And they were the only two in the whole contest. Had both of them been on one side each, like one on the first side, one on the second half, they would have done better, both of them. It didn't work out. And this is before, that's when it was a draw.
You're very experienced with the song contest. You've performed in it. You've acted as a producer in many a contest. Where do you see the future of the event going?
Well, we don't know, do we? That's also part of the beauty. At the moment, I mean, the TV media it's changing so rapidly, and people's habits are totally different now from what they were 5 years ago. And we don't really know where it's going to end and where it's going to take us. But that's also fascinating to be living and be active professionally in a time where things are changing like overnight. And I'm just going with the flow and I'm super excited about what's going to happen. So we'll see.
And what do you think the importance is of Eurovision Song Contest being a public service media event?
Well, first of all, the values of public service media is extremely important. And I think the more we go into times of polarization, I think it's so important that somebody is sort of being objective in all this and take responsibility for educating people instead of manipulating, which happens a lot right now in private media. which is troubling for the future of democracy. So I think we are more important and relevant than ever. And I also think that this is a platform where people can meet, as was meant from the beginning, with, you know, open hearts, open souls, and in friendliness, get to know each other's cultures and musical preferences. And so I think it's super important that we are still there and that we stay relevant and that we stay open to change.
Hi, I'm Alexandra from Kano.
I'm Fred.
I'm Tom Sugar.
And Eurovision for me is love.
For me is diversity.
And Eurovision for me is joy.
The official Eurovision Song Contest podcast.
You know what, Dave? It was incredible being in the room straight after the semi-final press conference. Krista was there with a couple of people who he works very closely with on the show just to bounce ideas off. And he was reacting as the press conference was taking place. When the final few countries were finding out whether they were in the first or second half of the show, it meant that everything had to change.
That's incredible. So he's doing that while the press conference is taking place, where they're selecting which half of the final they perform in. And were you tempted, Joe, to advise him on the running order and where to put particular songs? Did you agree with the choices?
You know what? I really enjoyed just witnessing the occasion. Of course, it would have been potentially tempting just to give a nudge and say, ah, oh, don't you think that one might go there? But in the end, my prediction for the final two in the running order was bang on with what Krista went for. He's bang on with saying that it is going to be an amazing show.
And it's all live from Tel Aviv from 2100 hours CEST, because it has to start at the same time every year. So wherever you're watching in the world, enjoy the Eurovision Song Contest. That is everything you need to know ahead of the grand final.
We'll be back soon after the show chatting to more people who played their part in producing the biggest and best live entertainment show in the world.
In the meantime, follow all the excitement here in Tel Aviv on our official Eurovision social channels. And to learn more about what else the EBU does when we're not producing the song contest, follow us at EBU_HQ on Twitter and Instagram, and look for the European Broadcasting Union on Facebook. You can see everything we do on our website, ebu.ch. That's it from us for now. Remember to subscribe to this podcast and join us again soon. For now, it's Shalom from Tel Aviv.
The official Eurovision Song Contest podcast, brought to you by the EBU.